in an apartment. His name was Ron Dack. Am I right about that?
Right.
And Ron started telling me about this incredible man, and I was having trouble, like most of you, about being God, because Edwards was telling me, you know, all of this. So anyway, Ron introduced me to her. And I'll tell you, my life has never been the same. It was not easy at all realizing at that time who I was. But I can tell you today, I know I'm God. And I know we are all one. So this man, hey girl, this man has brought a lot of spiritual truth into so many millions of people's lives. So let's give him a big hand. We can tell you more about it.
Thank you. Today we're beginning the perhaps the first part or the second part, whatever we want to call it, of our seminar together, our talking together on spiritual healing and on being ourselves and having fun. Now, the biggest problem that we all have in that is, how do we connect with our divine self? How do we become one? And you're saying, where is the meditation? And how do we become one with our divine self? How do we connect? How do we, you know, find this being within us that is what it's all about? Well, one of the ways is by meditation. And I'm going to tell you about the three-hour meditation. But first, I'm going to tell you about our individual meditation. We'll take a slight pause here. The art of learning meditation is a very simple thing. And my staff on campus have difficulty sometimes in meditating and introspecting because they want to do it formally. And I said, just make love to God. Just make love to God inside yourself. Good morning, God. Here I am again, and I'm ready for a wonderful day. What sort of adventures are we going to have today? I know, God, you and I are one. We're not separate, but it sort of gives me a feeling of talking to you and talking to me. And I talk to myself sometimes. You ever talk to yourself? You say, well, Herb, how are you today? Herb, you're a good-looking man. Herb, you're a fine fellow. Everyone enjoys seeing you and enjoys being in your company because you're such a friendly fellow. You know, you ever say that to yourself? I know you don't say Herb, but you probably say your own name, you know. So let's take a moment and have a little talk with ourselves right now. Let's close our eyes and say, I'll do the talking, you just do the listening, but you can put it in your voice and your name and your thought. Morning, God.
Morning, Herb.
How are things going in heaven, God?
Well, fine, Herb, but of course you should know heaven's in you.
Yeah, I know. Herb, why is it you always want to put me outside of yourself?
Well, I just have never learned to put you inside myself. I find you there, I know, but you know, God, why is it that I always want to put you outside?
Well, you want to put me outside for one simple, miserable reason, Herb.
Yeah, God, what is that?
Because you don't want the responsibility of taking charge of the things you hear inside yourself that you're supposed to be doing.
I do too, God.
When I have to go to the bathroom, I go to the bathroom. I'm not talking about your physical body.
Well, God, what are we talking about?
I'm talking about your mental body, your spiritual body. When your heart says, look at that person and see them whole and perfect, you say,
but I don't know them, God. They're not in my world. I have never met them. That's not my responsibility.
And it is your responsibility, Herb. Your responsibility is to look at anything that you have created and see it good and very good. You know, that's what we as God do. That's what I did as I created all. And that's what you as me, when I created all, did. Remember? Remember that? I know it was a day or so ago. Remember that?
Yeah, God, I remember it.
But
Things are different now, God. We have cars and airplanes and stuff. And son, self, her life has not changed one little bit. You have only one purpose in being on earth. Yeah, I know, God, but how come you can do it so easy, God, and I can't? Well, you do it easy, and I do it easy. I am always being myself and having fun. I'm always being just who I am. And Herb, you are always being just who you are. You're being me, you're being God, and I'm being you. We're one. Yeah, God, I know. I know. Herb, stop trying to make it so tough. Just love everybody. Just love yourself first. Love yourself and then see yourself in every person on the face of the earth. See yourself in the flowers and the trees. Remember, Herb, I told you that story? Yeah, God, what was the story? The story is about this woman who's a veterinarian, and she had some people bring an owl to her, and this owl, O-W-L, had cataracts on its eyes and could no longer fly in the wild and take care of itself and protect itself and live in the way that an owl does. Oh, yeah. And this veterinarian took the time to work on the owl's eyes, remove the cataract. After taking the cataract out, she put in two lenses so that the owl could go about living as an owl does and live a happy, healthy, dynamic life, finding all the little creatures that are her lunch and dinner and supper. Remember? Yeah. What was the message, God? The message is, whatever is presented to you, you are ready to handle it. But God, sometimes the pretty tough things get presented to me. Whatever is presented to you, you are ready to handle. Okay. Okay. A little more practice, Herb, and you'll stop seeing me separate from you, and you'll see us as a real team, one, doing all these beautiful things together, as one. And you know, Herb, the sooner you stop separating us, the easier it is to do it. Yeah, God, I know. Just do it, because you're wonderful. Okay, God. Okay. And so it is. Can you see our prayer, our communication, our networking, if you will, with the divine is something that we do every day, every moment of our life. And sometimes we unfortunately connect with somebody who's got a problem, and we think the problem is real, instead of thinking the problem is just something that they're going to get rid of, that they're going to not have to be concerned with. And if we just start looking at people, not as a problem, but as a solution, as the fulfilled reality, then it's done. But we have to get familiar with that divine self within ourselves. We have to get familiar with who we are. And if we're going to always be putting it outside ourselves, angels are nice. Mary Mother, Mother Mary of God is nice. But stop and think of it. What sort of silly people are we? We worship Mary, the Mother of God. You know, we worship Mary, the Mother of God. Not just a minute, I'm telling my story. We worship Mary, the Mother of God, and we think, oh, gee, you know, how great. And what did Jesus tell us? Let me tell the story. Pam is always Pam is always my little prompter here, you know. But what did Jesus say about his mother? Jesus was teaching in the synagogue, and the people were listening with all ears and all eagerness. And a knock came on the door. And one of the people went to answer the door, and the person says, "Tell Jesus his mother and brothers are out here and want to speak to him." And Jesus said, "What? What? Ye are my mother and brethren, you who listen to me and who follow what I teach. Other than that, I have no mother or brethren. You who follow what I teach." From the very get-go, he said, those who follow him, I mean, so is his earthly mother who gave birth to him. He loved her as his mother. He respected her. But she was not interested in his teaching. You say, "Well, my God, you know, Jesus Christ, he certainly should have been his own son's, you know, supporter, you know, saying, 'Go, boy, go, you know, I'm with you.'" But she wasn't there. And his brothers and sisters, they were born after he was born, you know. His brothers and sisters, they didn't follow him. They weren't interested in his teaching. And Jesus said, a prophet is without what? Without renown, without honor in his own hometown. He's not appreciated. He's not appreciated. Not because he's not good, not because he's not wonderful, magnificent, but what good can come out of Nazareth? What good can come out of Jerusalem? What good can come out of Bethlehem? That was the statement they made in those days. You see, this is what we do to ourselves. We separate ourselves from the real teaching. And as we are taught, go within, to the divine within, and follow it. So, of all the things that we're supposed to do, is to start to learn to listen and go within to the presence and the power within, and utilize that presence and that power in everything we do. Now, you look at Pamela Wengler here, and you think, "Well, now there's a dynamic, positive, most amazing woman." Well, what you see is nothing. If what you can see is the purity, the beauty, the spirit, the soul that lies within, then you've seen everything. But what outer show she gives is just something to titillate your interest, you know. But what's going on inside of her is the magic of all. What's going on inside of you is the magic of all, too. Now, Pam has learned how to listen within. She has learned how to meditate. She has had one of the greatest teachers that we have ever met, Richard, working with her, showing her the way and how to listen within. Pam is a dynamic duo, a wizard, a fantastic mover. And then Richard is doing his thing in his peaceful, gentle, loving, sensitive, caring way. And Pam says, "We'll never get there on time. We'll never do this on time." And Richard says, "We always do, don't we? We always do." And you see, the ability to learn this patience and this peace does not come easy. I especially with her, but just imagine the Pope. You know, the Pope used to run the show. And when the Pope got to be the Pope, he's no longer running the show. The Pope is just being the Pope. Everybody else is running the show. And he just does his thing when it's time. "Okay, Pope, stand up and give your blessing. Now sit down." "Don't talk too long, Pope. We've got other things to do, you know. We've got deadlines to meet. We have shows to meet. Now we got to get your jet underway. Look, boys, if that's my jet, it's going to wait until I am good and well ready to go and take it. But we have planned this whole thing. I am the cheese.
You plan it around me. I am, and he'd like to say this, but he doesn't, I am God. Now pay attention. Can you imagine the Pope would say to his congregation, I am God? Half of them would drop dead and the other half would shoot him. Because they don't realize that that's what Jesus said, you know. But, and the Pope is merely saying what Jesus said, and the Pope's supposed to be the right hand of Jesus, you know, and all that good stuff. So, you know, we forget our place in life. Now, Richard, what's your place? Richard, your place is being peace. Your place is being the fulfillment of the divine within. Your place is being the wisdom. Your place is being the joy. You're living with a dynamic duo here in Pam and her God presence. And you are always there, gently guiding her so that she doesn't go too fast or too slow. And Pam doesn't realize that Richard stayed in San Diego for a period of time to give her time to just relax and realize everything gets done in its right time, right? Okay, now. I'm going to share with you the 3-hour meditation, which we have a few pamphlets out there. I don't know if there's enough for everybody, but... Why, certainly the voice of peace and quietness has a comment to make.
We describe it this way. She is the trailblazer.
She's the trailblazer.
We have to smooth the road out and pave it so that others who follow know which direction to go.
If you remember the Roman soldiers and the Roman people, they went ahead and built the road all over Rome and everywhere, and then the soldiers marched down the road. But you're like the road builder, Richard. You do a beautiful, smooth, fantastic, necessary job. You're the foundation, and she is the sparkle that follows on the foundation. That all are necessary. All are very necessary. No, we are very fantastic here. We have this booklet. It's called The 3-Hour Meditation. And if we don't have enough of them to go around, for any of you who want them, we'll send them along to Pam. Or when she stops, she should stop off at her watering station in Campo as she goes by from San Diego and pick up a load of books and things as you may want to have them. But in this 3-hour meditation, this is basically how it works. I have designed this 3-hour meditation based upon psychological principles. It's based upon something that does function. It's used in all psychologists' offices, all psychiatrists' offices. It's a fundamental realistic attitude. First, it's based upon deciding who you are. Then, why you can confirm in yourself who you are, and then stop and listen to who you are. You see, once you stop fighting who you are, once you stop fighting the idea that you're God, you're the creator of the world, you're all, once you stop fighting that, and you know you're all fighting that, this is something that it just comes natural to us, because if we're God, why aren't we walking on water? You know, if we're God, why aren't we having a perfect body, having a perfect mind, having a perfect world that we're living in? Well, you are, and you are, and you are. It's just that you haven't opened your eyes yet. Think about this. People are teachers. How many of you are teachers at schools? Yeah, okay. Well, now, if you have the big idea that you're teaching something, you're very unfortunate, because you cannot teach anything. All knowledge is known by all people all the time. All knowledge is known by all people all the time. The only thing that a teacher does is to work with a student to reveal within themselves what they already know. The knowledge is always there. And what does the student say? Oh, gotcha. Oh, I see. Oh, that's how it's... Oh, yes, I know. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2 is 4. And they fight it. Oh, they fight it. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2... I'll never get that stuff. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2 is 4. Oh, yeah. Okay. When they stop fighting, they let it be revealed to them, and then all of mathematics are easy. But the teacher has been trained in school to challenge the students and make them unhappy with themselves because they're so stupid. Because they don't know, and the teacher does. And the teacher says, okay, say, what is 2 times 2? Well, teacher, if you don't know, you're supposed to be teaching us. You tell me, you know, you hear those interesting remarks. Well, if the teacher would say, I like 2 times 2, because 2 times 2 is so much fun. You can put 2 dogs together and 2 dogs together and you got 4 dogs, you know? Or you can have 2 dogs and 2 dogs and you multiply them and you got 4 dogs. That is interesting. You can take 1 times 1 and you have 1. You don't have 2. And you take 1 plus 1 and you have 2, because you put the 2 together with a plus sign. And when you take the 2 together and have a minus sign between them, then you haven't got either. You know, 1 minus 1 is what? Nothing. 0. You know, right? What else do you get when you get 1 minus 1? How much is it? 1 minus 1 is what? Is this a sneeze? See, that's what we always do. When we don't know the answer, then we sneeze. But you see, within us is all knowledge. And the sooner we begin to learn to get into that inner awareness. I had a class up in Duluth, Minnesota. Another one in Minneapolis. And in Duluth, this father came to me. He says, Herb, I'm going to take the test to become a stockbroker. And he says, I really don't like math. And he says, how can I pass the test? I said, oh, that's easy. Yeah, tell me how. I said, all right. Well, we were at his home. He had invited me over for dinner. And his son was sitting around the corner at 14 years old. He didn't want me to see that he was there, you know. But he was listening. And so I said, all right, what you do is you say, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. And the father said, all right, I'll do that. So the father went down, took his test, and passed. He was just flippant. He passed. Because God in him did know the answer. But his son Todd, he was having trouble in algebra. In fact, he was failing in algebra. In fact, the teacher thought he was it. And so the teacher called the father in. I want to talk to you about your son and his work here in school. So the father went to school. And the teacher says, your son is a cheat. He's a cheat. And the father said, what did he do? He got 100 on his test. He's a cheat, got 100 on his test. Well, he has never gotten a passing grade on his test. Now he's gotten 100 on his test. And so the father said, well, what can I say? You know, did the kids around him all get 100? Nope. Well, who did he copy from? Who did he cheat from? Well, he cheated. In algebra, you got to write down how you get to the answer, you know, and then you write down the answer. But you can't just write down the answer. You got to write down how you got to it. And the teacher said, he cheated. And the father said, no, let's give him a test right here and have him do it right in front of us and have him do it. No, I won't. And he said, well, let's see the principal. So they talked to the principal, and the principal says, well, no, he didn't hear the teacher saying no. He said, okay, we'll give him a test right here in front of us. Okay, Todd, sit down and do the test. First, Todd did the test again.
but he only wrote the answers. And the teacher says, see, he cheated. Well, how did he cheat? By just having the correct answer? Like, is that cheating? And so then he got the principal in there and got the boy doing it again. And so they said, now write down how you arrived at that answer. Well, that's part of the answer, how you arrived at the answer. Now, he was just asked for the answer, which would be the summation, you know, the finale of each question. But how did you get to that? So he wrote it down, blah, blah, blah. He didn't know that I know that I know. God only knows the answer. Flip it like that. Just flip it. You know how kids can be. Flip it, you know. But he just did it. And he passed. Again, another 100. And I didn't say, remember that forever and always, Todd, don't ever forget that. You know, I don't say that at all. He just did it and did beautifully. He went within himself, not knowing how he did it, not knowing what he was doing, the route he was taking, you know, what streets he went down. He didn't even know anything. He just followed what he believed in himself, and he did it. In El Centro, California, I had a church there for a couple of years, and one young man in the church was an Eagle Scout. And as an Eagle Scout, he had to pass certain tests. Well, he was going to be an Eagle Scout, but he had to pass this last test to be an Eagle Scout. And it was mean, at school, he had to pass his class on history. In all the other classes, he did well, but history just was a bummer for him. And so he says, Dr. Warner, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I said, well, are you a smart boy? Yep. Do you know all the answers to everything else that you want to know? Yep. I said, well, you just say, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. And you go in and you take your history test. And when you take your history test, it will just be completely done and answered for you. He went in and took the history test. Naturally, he aced it out, you know. 100%. And he got his Eagle's badge. He never forgot me. His father is an attorney down in El Centro, and his father came up to me and says, Herb, we've got to do something for you. You're so wonderful. You're so good. I said, hey, you're really practicing what we're teaching. I mean, you can be taught all these wonderful things by all the great and the not so great teachers of the world, but if you don't practice it, what good does it do? You know? What good does it do if you don't practice it? And so he practiced it. He practiced it. And wonderful things have happened in his life and in the father's. And then the father said, Herb, we're going to get you a better car on the board of directors of the church. I said, okay. I said, I want a Mercedes 450 SL or nothing else, you know, because I didn't think they could afford it. Well, El Central is the seven crops a year capital of the world, and all those people are rich ranchers. And so they got it, went out and leased me a 450 SL and said, there you are, Herb. I said, well, thank you. But you see, I tried to limit them by thinking of them as being poor, and they were not. They heard me teach, and they never wanted me to leave because we were having such a good time. But I left, of course. Went to other churches in Minneapolis after that. But you see, always practicing the principle, always teaching this one simple statement, this one simple concept, and in practicing it, miracles happen. Now, how do you make contact with your divine within so that you can start practicing them? You don't have to do the three-hour meditation. You don't have to do anything. You just say, I know that I know that I know God in me knows the answer. Teach this to your students if you can. I know that I know that I know the wisdom in me knows the answer. You know, that's acceptable, you know. The wisdom in me, the mind within me knows the answer. And everybody's got a mind, at least they think they do, you know. So I know that I know that I know the mind within me knows the answer, and it knows it. And then they will start, you know, acting upon it, and magic will happen in their lives, and they'll be fulfilled. The big problem that people have, and you are no exception, even though you call yourself religious people and people who have found a faith and found a church and found God and found all that stuff, is you don't believe in yourself, and you don't believe in God.
You don't believe in God because you can't touch him, you know? You don't believe in God because you never met him. You don't believe in God because that's something like Santa Claus, you know? And Santa Claus is not a nice guy. Santa Claus is not a nice guy. He checks on all the boys and girls to see if you're naughty or nice. Remember? He keeps a big book. And if you're naughty, he puts coal in your stockings. And if you're nice, then he gives you toys. Oh, what the hell kind of God is that? I mean, what kind of Santa Claus is that? You know? He's only supposed to be nice to people. He's not supposed to judge people. But you see, so Santa Claus and God and the judgment are things that have all been sort of added together over the years. You know, how many of you have ever read Dante's Inferno? It's a beautiful book, all about hell and all about purgatory and all about what goes on there. And it's a big lithography book, a lovely, beautiful picture. The artwork is absolutely fantastic. But it's got one thing wrong. What's that?
There is nothing.
There's only now. That's true. But in this book, they got one thing wrong. When you move from one dimension to the other, do you take your body with you? Do you take your physical body with you? You take your spiritual body, you take your mental body, you take your ethereal body, or whatever terms you want to call it. But your physical corpus, you either dissolve like that, or you let it decay. But you don't take it with you. Now, the evil people would certainly not be taking their bodies with them. The evil people would certainly not be doing this. And here they are, these evil people in hell and purgatory with their bodies. And their bodies are in the hellfires and all that sort of stuff. You believe that stuff. You believe that stuff. And isn't that silly? Isn't that silly to believe something that's so obviously not correct? And we believe it. How many people in the higher upper of the Catholic Church, of the upper echelon of business and society, and the Catholic Church is the biggest church in the world as far as money goes today, you know. It's the richest church in the world. They own the greatest amount of money. They don't have the greatest number of people. The Hindus do that. But the Catholics don't. Interesting, isn't it? Look in your almanac sometime and look at who's who in different churches. And it's interesting that, and you know who's one of the small ones? The Jews. And who has some of the strongest opinion-making ability in the world? The Jews. The wonderful Jewish people. And they're always at their wailing wall. Why us, God? Why us poor people? And they're the richest people in the world. They sponsored the Second World War. They sponsor every war. They make the money available to the dictators who want to have war. Really? You know? Richard is sponsoring people too. And he gives them loans for things so they can go and spend it wildly on wine, women, and song, and then they come back and haven't got to pay. And Richard says, okay, we'll take your collateral, your car. I mean, you know, that's pretty mean, isn't it? That's what the Jews are definitely directed to in much of their work. And then they say, why me? I always say that if the Hebrews, if the Jews really want to have their Holy Land back, there's a simple way, a very simple way to do it. All you do is send all your Jews to Palestine, or wherever it is they want to buy Israel back or whatever, and have them go and buy it back. Everything is for sale, you know that. Everything is for sale. Even people's ethics and their values, everything's for sale. It's a shame to say that, but it is. And if they really wanted it, they could buy it back. But you know why they don't want it? Because if they own it, they have nothing to be unhappy about. Because the very thing that they're unhappy about is not having their homeland, and they could buy it back. But they don't want it, you know? Now, are you willing to take what it costs to learn about your divine inner self? Are you willing to invest what it takes to move into your inner space? Well, I recommend, and you certainly don't have to do the things that I recommend, but I recommend it. Number one, have we sold all the books on the book table yet? I say to you, don't read any books. after I sold all the books, after I sold them, but don't read anybody else's book. You see, you have been given so much time to live your life, and that's called the now, which is eternal, but it's a now. And are you going to spend your time reading what somebody else thinks of how you should listen to the divine within, if somebody else says how you should live your life and how you should be? Or are you going to spend your time going right inside here to the presence within and listen to the presence within and follow what the presence within said? As we read these things and we see these stories, like Kinship with All Life, we say, yeah, I can see how that works. He knew it all along. He knew it all along. You knew it all along. You read Genesis, and it says, God created all things good and very good. And then you go to the second chapter, and Adam and Eve come along, and they're getting into trouble. Now, why? Why did the Bible need to go into Genesis? Because this is what the people at that time were doing. You see, even that is interesting. In the first chapter of the Bible, what do you have? The first people, who were they? Adam and Eve. Were there any other people on the face of the earth? Nope. Then Adam and Eve had two kids, and Cain and Abel. Now, where did Cain and Abel learn to hate each other? Did Abel hate Cain? No. Abel was happy, and Abel was doing his thing. He was able to do everything, and he did it very well. Cain wanted what Abel had, wanted what Abel did, so he put Abel out of sight. He killed him. And so, what happened to Cain then? He was sent away from home for being a naughty boy. What else can you do, And he went off and got married. Now, where did he find the woman? Where did he find this other family on the face of the earth? I mean, the Bible should have at least created the other family. I'm not trying to say the Bible is stupid and all that kind of stuff. You can draw your own conclusion. But the thing is, where did the other family come from? Now, that's only the beginning. Then they compounded. Now, the Bible is the story of the religious development of a people, whether it's Hindu, Christian, or whatever it may be. It's the story of the religious development of a people. We tend to worship it. The story of Abraham and his son, what was his son's name? Abraham and Esau?
Isaac.
Abraham and Isaac. And they became the father of the people, as though that was the beginning of it all. And we read these stories, and in our mind and our heart we say, oh, I can't believe in a thing like that. I'm at odds with it. It tests my credibility totally, and I just cannot do this. You see, now, inside of each of us, we have this lack of credibility. We have this lack. We're incredulous about everything in life. We doubt it. We wonder about it. Now, if we can start bypassing all that, that's the main thing. People come to me for treatment, for healing all the time. And they say, Herb, I got a broken leg. I said, super! You want another broken leg? Great, let's break the other one. Then you have two. No, I don't want any broken leg. Well, why did you tell me you wanted to be healed with a broken leg? I didn't say that. I said, I don't want my broken leg. Well, don't tell me about it. What do you want? You see, we spend all our time telling about what we don't want, about Cain and Abel, about Adam and Eve, about the world, about the problems on earth. Let's start spending our time on the good. Let's start spending our time on the healing we want. I'm throwing a lot of little stories in here, but we're all aiming for this one program here. What would be the most tragic thing to happen to any one of you in this room right now? What would be the most tragic thing to happen to any of you in this room right now? And that includes you, Duane, very much. What would be the most tragic thing to happen to you? If each one of you had a spiritual healing right now, a spiritual healing, and you have many spiritual healings in your life that you don't know about, but if you had a spiritual healing right now and it healed you of all the limiting activities and factors of your life, imagine that. A spiritual healing to heal you of all the limiting attitudes of your life. You know what would be the first thing you'd lose? You couldn't tell anybody that you used to have a problem and now you're healed, you know? I used to wear glasses and now I don't have to wear glasses. I used to have a hearing aid and now I don't have a hearing aid. I used to be a homosexual, now I'm not a homosexual. I used to be a heterosexual, now I'm not a heterosexual. I am divine. I am all. I am all. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I am everything. And you see, this is the beauty of it all. Do you understand? This is the beauty of it all. We are all. And the sooner we start realizing that we are all, then we won't limit ourselves to saying that we're not. You understand? We are so indoctrinated in saying, well, I had my appendix out, see here, see the scar, you know. And in our family, there's always been the people who, diabetes runs in our family, or cancer runs in our family, or early death. And we talked about that last night. Since 1950, people have lived a total of 30 years longer life expectancy. It's fantastic. Look at your insurance rates. It's amazing. You know, and what's retirement? You want to retire at 70? You crazy? You're just starting on your midlife, you know? And that's true. Now, so, if you have a spiritual healing, which is okay, if you have a spiritual healing, you will not remember what you were sick with to tell anybody about it. You see, we're sick with limiting ourselves. I am a child. That's a sickness. I'm an adult. That's a sickness. I'm a boy. That's a sickness. I'm a girl. That's a sickness. See, whatever we have that we use as a excuse for not being all is a sickness. And so if we are spiritually healed, we are now an illumined being. We are now living in our ideal spirit, mind, and body. We are now living in our magnificent thought system. Someone comes up to me and says, I think I'm going to go over to Arizona this afternoon. And I'll say, oh, okay. What's the capital of Arizona? What's the population of the capital? You know, how many people are living in the city of Tucson where you're going? Well, you mean in the suburbs or in the city? Or, you know, I mean, I must be specific, you know, where is it? And what's the temperature? What's the temperature right now in Tucson? And you're over in San Francisco and you haven't looked at anything. You know all things. Now, at first, that would blow your mind because you're not used to knowing all things. But then after a while, it'd be just natural. When a person is a mathematician, it's just natural that they know how to add and subtract. If a person's not a mathematician, it's just natural they don't know how. So what is it that you want to be natural? Do you want natural to be the allness or natural to be the limitation? Whatever you feel is right for you. It doesn't have to be. Now, do you want to, right this day, be your ideal self? Sounds good. If you do, then start paying attention to who lives inside here, to what lives inside here, to who you are. Start paying attention to it. Now, I have the three-hour meditation, and I have taught this for years, very successfully, but I cannot show you any person who has fulfilled the three-hour meditation program as I have designed it and defined it, because unless you are there too, you cannot see them. If you are a beautiful person, you can only see beautiful people in your life. You cannot see anyone who is not beautiful. If you ever see someone who's not beautiful in your life, that area is one area you're not beautiful yourself. If you see any person in your life who is not whole and perfect like you are, then that's an area you're not whole and perfect in. If you see any person needing to improve, oh boy, you got work to do at home. You know, this is true. You say, not me. I'm going out and helping the poor. That's because you're poor. If you were rich, really rich, would you help the poor? No. If you were really rich, you would be really rich. And you would only live with the rich. You'd only circulate with the rich. You'd only associate with rich people. And look, a lot of rich people help poor people. A lot of rich people help poor people. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Money.
Huh?
They give money, they donate, but that's not helping.
No. Rich people do not help poor people. Rich people get a tax deduction on their money if they will donate it to nonprofit corporations people who are helping poor people are nonprofit corporations. So they're not helping poor people, they're helping themselves, and they're doing very well at it. Now, Bill Gates, what was the reason that he gave so much money to a certain hospital program for the study of cancer? Because his mother had died of that. And he wanted to find the solution to it. And if Bill Gates really wanted to find the solution to it, what would he do?
He'd search it himself.
He'd do what?
He'd search it himself.
He would do what?
He would research it himself.
He would research it himself. Why would he research it himself? Because he is a genius. He is brilliant. He is taking his brilliance and working it in the software that he's doing and doing a wonderful job. You know that. He is fantastic in every way. And rich. The richest man in the world. If he really cared about what took his mother, he would study it himself and he would find the answer. You understand that? If you have any area of your life that is important to you, research it, and you will find the answer. Now, don't go half-baked on this thing here. I want to develop the most beautiful pollution-free car in the world. Okay, that's fine. Now, who wants it? Nobody. Who's going to buy it? Nobody. Who's going to drive it? Nobody. You're going to do it for yourself. Okay, now, I want to create the best pollution-free car in the world that is the most comfortable, the most wonderful car, at the best price available, that's lower price than any other car in the market. In fact, I want to give my car to everybody on earth and let them have a car that is pollution-free and all this sort of stuff, and they don't even have to pay for it. I give it to them. Well, now, do you think that would be a success? No. People would be incredulous about it. They wouldn't believe it, and they wouldn't follow it. They wouldn't encourage you. Now, if you say, I want for myself a pollution-free car that is just wonderful, and it's for myself, and you build it for yourself, and you enjoy it yourself, everybody and his brother is going to want it too. First, you do it for yourself. First, you do anything for yourself, and when you do it for yourself, the rest of the world says, bravo, great, I agree with you. Let's, you know, join in on that. Now, what do you think about that? What is it that's most important to you? Is it most important for you to find out where the gas station is for this pollution-free car? Is it most important to find out where the titanium is or the ultralight metals that are going to go into it to make it so light that it just moves by itself, so to speak? Is it most important? You see, those are details. And with God, you don't have to work with details. God and the law of cause and effect are one. And they merely say, whoever you think you are, that is what we exacerbate. That's what we build and grow and encourage to be. Now, who do you think you are? If you think that you're God, wow, you know? Don't go reading his book on God or their book on God, because they have a different idea of God. Read your own. And when you read your own, you'll find out that you are quite fantastic. You are quite amazing. You look at these terrible, and I'm trying to talk terrible right now, you look at these terrible, idiotic, stupid children who are autistic. Those stupid, autistic children, you know? Terrible, dumb, idiots. They have God locked up within them, okay? But God peeks through every once in a while and does some beautiful thing. Like, they can do mathematics. They can do numbers. They can do things that you and I would give our eye tooth to do, you know? And they just do it, poof, like that, without a thought. You see, they got a leak. The God in them is peeking out through those little facets. Well, now, one woman had a child in India. She's in National Geographic this month. She had a child in India, and the child was autistic and couldn't do anything. And everybody says, put the child in a school and, you know, let them be in a controlled situation where they don't hurt themselves. But the child would never be able to love you, never be able to be a great child. And this mother said, no. She says, I'm going to train that child. I'm going to train that child because I believe in my child. And so she trained her child. He didn't cease to be autistic, but he started to express himself in ways that they had never known before. He couldn't speak. He couldn't do many things. And he was always like this, you know, in this classic pose. But what did he do? She taught him how to write, to express what was in his heart. She put the pencil with tape around his hand to hold it so that it wouldn't lose the pencil all the time. Now he's gotten himself so strong, he can write with and hold the pencil himself. And he is moving. Now, in his lifetime, he may never accomplish much at all. But in his lifetime, he has learned to love his mother. He has learned to love himself. He has learned to realize that the sharing, the caring that others have for him and the believing in him that others have was so wonderful and so magical that it made his whole life worthwhile. You see, we don't know what blessing we're going to be to ourselves or to others. We don't know. We don't know whether we're going to be something great or something not so great. But all that matters is, are you who you really are? Are you really expressing the divinity that's within you? So let's look at this three-hour meditation right now. A three-hour meditation, and what time did you want to go to before you had your lunch break?
12.
Excuse me?
12.
12.
You guys okay with 12?
Now, did you want to take a short pause right now? And then we'll come back in 10 minutes, at a quarter after, and then we'll go on with this? Or did you want me just to go straight ahead? You want to take a pause?
Yeah, I think we're going to move back.
Okay, take a pause and then...